All right, everyone. We've got a special interview today. We've got Philip Bates, who is the 2018 winner of the IES Film Competition. In addition to that, he's also the first student we've talked to who studied abroad for an entire year, and he also tried to learn two languages during his time. It's a pretty awesome interview. Tune in if you're interested. If you're going to study abroad with IES or if you're interested in video production too, this is an interview. This competition is really cool. And aside from Philip, there were a lot of great submissions. I got to actually go to the awards in Chicago. And let me know if you have any questions and enjoy. All right, thanks.
The three biggest reasons only 10% of students study abroad. They're afraid of being homesick, they don't think it's safe, and the number one reason people don't study abroad is cost. We're here to dispel all that. Find out exactly how that 10% crafted their study abroad journey and how you can too. I'm Chris Carlton, and this is the Study Abroadcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Study Abroadcast. I am here with Philip Bates of UT Knoxville. He studied abroad in Morocco, and he's actually a special interview. We'll find out why in a bit. But Philip, before we get into that, thank you very much for being here, and welcome to the show.
What up, Chris? Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about my experience with you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Philip, so tell me about getting started. What made you decide on Morocco, and you went for the entire semester, right? For a spring semester?
So I went actually for an entire academic year.
So you're the first person that we've had that went for an entire year. Yeah. So tell us about the where and the when. So how long? Like, why did you choose Morocco, and why did you choose a year as opposed to a semester or even a summer?
Yeah, good question. So kind of a few years ago when I first entered college, I started meeting international students. That's what sparked my desire to study French. That's part of my major. Not too relevant for the story, but I'll just keep it at that. So it's part of my major. And for the longest time, I always thought I would study in France or Europe due to, you know, this passion for French. And I had tons of connections. But eventually, my junior year, I decided I was also going to study Arabic. So this combining of French and Arabic really kind of opened my eyes to see that there were so many opportunities other than Europe and France to study and be around these languages. And that's when my eyes kind of began to shift towards North Africa. And during this time, I also found out about the Boren Scholarship. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Boren Scholarship. It's a critical language kind of scholarship, similar to that. So there was some money to go study a critical language such as Arabic, and that's kind of what compelled me to choose Morocco. And when I was applying for this scholarship, I chose two semesters because it was going to make me more competitive as an applicant to show that, hey, I was willing to go and stay for this amount of time and be around the language and the culture. And unfortunately, I was selected. And so I went, and for the fall 2017 and spring 2018 year, I was in Rabat, Morocco.
Okay.
It was incredible.
So wow. So tell me about, I'm just curious first about the, you said you studied Arabic, right? Now, how are you speaking Arabic? Like, can you get along in a conversation? And you said you're doing French too. So how good are you with Arabic?
Yeah. So good question. My French is much farther along than my Arabic for sure. I'm not fluent in any one of those. My Arabic has really taken a few steps back since I've returned.
Yeah.
I returned from from Morocco in June. So it's been about, 5 months since I've really been around it, really been using it. So it's taken a couple steps back. Before I went, I had 1 year of studying Arabic at the University of Tennessee, where I'm a student. So that gave me a good foundation with the alphabet, kind of the letters, how they go together. Knew, you know, some sentences, could communicate a little bit, but still, when I arrived in Morocco, it was it was almost like a wave just crashing over me every single day of new information. It was a different dialect, and it's one of the more unique dialects in the North Africa, Middle East region.
Yeah.
It's not super common throughout the rest of the Arab world. And But yeah, definitely being around it for 9 months, my comprehension really got to be at a pretty high level. But speaking is still such a challenge for me because it's doing French and Arabic at the same time. It was hard to really separate the two. So when I was there, it was kind of just, I always joke, it was always a big mix of everything. but the people are so great. They're hospitable. And I think almost being in that environment where I was free to make mistakes and free to just be myself, my goofy self, that really allowed me to learn the most, and the people really respected, you know, my efforts. And they weren't all, you know, they weren't, oh, you've, they weren't all rule based. Oh, you missed this rule or you should have said this. They just would laugh along with me and, you know, we're about the friendships.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you were in an environment that was really conducive to learning.
Oh, for
so,
sure.
So yeah. you mentioned the scholarship that you applied to and you received. Tell me about the process with that. Was it tedious? Like, how long did it take? And did you apply for any other scholarships? And what program did you go through to do all this?
Yeah, so you might be familiar with it, but your audience may not. So I'll kind of give a brief overview. So the Boren Scholarship is an initiative under the State Department through the National Security Exchange Program. So this program was set up, I think, 25, 30 years ago to kind of increase mutual understanding between countries and regions in the world where United States, we have an interest for national security and an interest to understand those parts of the world better. So they have this funding available for students who are motivated and willing to go study languages such as Arabic, Urdu, Chinese, Farsi. Languages are not typical, commonly taught in high school or college settings in the U.S. And there's another one similar. The Critical Language Scholarship is a shorter term scholarship, mainly for the summer, and then the Boren Scholarship is a year long or usually a 6 month to 12 month commitment. They provide a large chunk of the funding. But the thing that's unique about the Boren Scholarship is there's a federal government service requirement upon completion. So the idea behind this is, you know, students are going to study these languages, learning about these parts of the world. They're going to return home and they're going to work in the federal government in some sort of capacity. It could be, you know, a million different things probably. And so they'll be given the knowledge that they've learned to help make the government run and influence, I guess, policy decisions and whatnot. So that's kind of the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
And I went through that and was selected. And so the application process was pretty tedious. It's you have two pretty big essays and they limit you on words. So you have to be really, straight the point, but also strategic with every little word to kind of tell your story and tell why you're selecting the region and the language that you are selecting.
Right. No. It sounds tedious, but that's and then that's kind of part of the program is that you go for a year too. So with the Arabic, I heard this was a long time ago, but I heard as far as like getting a job, like it sounds so simple. Like if you can speak something, like speak a language fluently and you're hired and you get like a really good paying job and you can go like pretty much anywhere. Uh-huh. And it just sounds like, I mean, of all the classes you have to take and everything, and you'd think like, I wish they could just have a program where you didn't have to take all these prerequisites and everything. And you just spent 4 years like straight up learning Arabic.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then you're ready, but no, you've got to learn science and you've got to take math prerequisites. Yeah. And you've got like I don't understand it, so but you're kind of, it sounds like you're on the right path and you're doing everything that you can or should be doing as an undergrad. So
yeah, well, I hope so.
I'm
on the right track.
More power to you.
Thank you.
And so packing up for a year, did you have any fears or reservations before you left? I mean, a year is a long time to go. What, from when to when were you there? Like from what?
Yeah, month? So I was there from August of 2017 to roughly June of 2018.
So like 10 months.
The unique thing was I came home. I had a break in between my semesters, my classes.
Okay, so it was like any winter break, like, and you got to come home.
It was. So I studied with, this is part of the other question I forgot to answer, but the program I went through was IES, so the International Education for Students, top-notch organization. They've been around for several decades. I think they're one of the oldest, the most kind of recognized groups out there. They have programs all over the world. And when I was trying to find a program to go through to use, you know, the scholarship that I got to apply it towards a program, this IES, they have a relationship with my university. So that influenced my decision to go with them, because I was going to be taking these classes in French and also Arabic, related also to North African politics and the Middle East. So really fascinating, you know, selection of courses. And I was able to get credit for a lot of those that transferred back to my university that they recognized. But when I left, and I came home during Christmas for about 4 or 5 weeks. So I wasn't there technically for all 9 months, but I was there for a very, very large chunk of it. But coming home, you know, during Christmas and the New Year's was very healthy, and it was good to kind of press reset.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
And then when I went back, I knew what I was getting into. My brother and brother-in-law traveled with me going back, and it was fun to show them and be kind of tour guide. And then my parents actually visited me in the spring. When I left, let me answer this question. When I left, there wasn't a lot of fears about necessarily going. I think I had a summer to kind of prepare myself mentally and kind of emotionally, physically for what I was getting into. But I was super excited for the adventure and just the challenge of being in a new place where I was going to be around these languages and having to kind of sink or swim, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say the biggest fear, maybe the reservation I had, was not really related to where I was going or what I was getting into, but kind of what I was having to, at that time, it felt like I was having to choose between. So I have another big passion for music, and I write music, produce music, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later on. I've had a passion for several years now of writing music, producing. And when I left for Morocco, that was kind of a big reservation of mine, because it felt as if I was having to choose between two passions of mine, pursuing the Morocco, the languages, or pursuing this music and this, you know, writing and producing. I was not going to have the ability to produce or create music being in Morocco. So that was a big kind of fear of mine. It felt as if, oh, I'm leaving for 9 months, a year. This other dream of mine is going to die. It's going to crash into the ground.
It's almost like the reverse of the languages. Like, you know, you said you got back and now you're losing the Arabic. It's kind of like that for the music. Like you go.
Exactly. Yeah. So I felt like I was having to really like press pause on this. But after speaking to a really good friend of mine, he gave me some of the best advice I've ever heard. And it was this. He said, the more life you live and the more, you know, experiences you have, the more life you pour into your music or into whatever creative thing you do. So hearing that really, really, you know, put my mind at rest and realized, hey, you know, you only live once. I'll never probably get this opportunity to go and be in this environment ever again in my life. Music is always going to be a passion. And in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, maybe I'll be inspired by my experiences to write a song, but it was never concretely like something I was going to do.
Yeah.
That'll be a little sneak peek for later for your audience.
Are you from Tennessee?
I am. So I'm from just outside of Nashville.
Oh my God. So, and Nashville has nothing to do with music, right? Like, what do they know about music? Yeah. So, okay. So you've got music roots and you're trying to juggle both of them. Great. Okay. So this is really good. And so tell me about, so you're there, you're over there now. And, in case you haven't noticed now, I try to condense the entire journey into a conversation. Like, you know, we decided on Morocco and now we're over there. Right. So we get over there and we find out you went for a year and I'll bet a lot of people freaked out. You're the first interview we've had that's been there for a year, but it's really nice to know that you get to come home or you get that like normal winter break. And I think that's perfect. So, and I always say the longer, the better. So, so how did, let me, tell me about the day to day, for example. So like, what were the classes like? Did you take, how many credits a semester did you take? Uh-huh. How are the classes different than UT Knoxville? How are they the same? Were they harder, easier? Yeah. Like, tell me about that.
So Every day we had, so after our little initial orientation period where we had a survival Arabic courses, we came back to Rabat. We were in a different city for that. So we came back, we met our host families. I live with a host family, by the way, which is another crucial point, I think. But met my host family. We immediately, you know, started off on a good foot and had a great relationship. So every day they would get up around, let's see, like 7:30. My host mother would have breakfast, would be making breakfast for me. I would eat and then I would head to class. So I lived in the Medina. And those of you listening, you might be able to just Google Medina or you know, Morocco, Medina. It's the oldest part of the city. So it's where all the houses, the buildings are built together on top of each other. These alleyways that kind of weave in and out of the city. It's like a labyrinth, a maze. It was such a unique place to live. I lived about maybe 45 seconds from the beach. Some of the best waves to go surfing. I had a rooftop, you know, flat rooftop, kind of typical what you'd think of the Middle East or North Africa, Morocco. So every night, you know, the sunsets were just the absolute best. So that's just to kind of give viewers an idea of where I was. So I would wake up, have breakfast, and then I would walk to class. First semester, I biked a lot. I had a bike, which was fun, and had Arabic every day, Monday through Friday, for about an hour and a half with other American students who were at the same level. So the first semester, I was at about 15 hours, I believe.
Okay.
Or 16. So 16 hours. I had it was either 15 or 18. So it was a lot of classes. And, you know, it kept me busy. The classes, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, they were on some really fascinating subjects. North African politics. Had a class on Islam in the Middle East, North Africa region. Had a North African Maghrebian literature class taught in French. And also the Islam class that was taught in French as well. And then I had my Arabic class, and then I also took a Moroccan Arabic class, so kind of a class focused solely on the Moroccan dialect of Arabic, because I was studying the modern standard Arabic, so it's a different, very, very, very different, kind of more what they teach in the schools and what's kind of written in the newspapers and whatnot, but the stuff spoken on the street is much different. And honestly, that year, the year I was there was one of the best I've had academically, just as far as learning. And, you know, the classroom sizes were much, much smaller than anything I've ever had. So I go to a very, very large school, University of Tennessee, Knoxville, about 30,000 undergrad students. So I've always had classes where, you know, a small class in my mind would be 50, 60 people, which is not small at all, right? So when I was there having classes with just five or six others, and maybe the most we had in one class was 10 or 12, I really got to know all of my professors very, very well. We would periodically go to a cafe and just chit-chat, talk, and they were so hospitable. And I still communicate with a lot of them, even to this day, over WhatsApp or Facebook. So it's really cool. The relationships I made with the professors is something that really stands out to me.
Yeah. Well, that sounds – so you're telling me that you took classes in – like the classes were taught – some of them were taught in French about
– About other – yeah, about other subjects not related to French. Correct, yeah.
Whoa. So you must – so your French was probably pretty good, right?
It's okay. Yeah. Like my ability to listen and understand is much better than my ability to like talk. And whenever I talk, it's still very like Americanized, broken. But I'm making it. You know, I'm trying my best. So.
Yeah. No. Okay. That's good to know. So they definitely kept you busy. And what did you before? What would you tell someone, like, if you had a little brother or sister or like a friend who is coming along and they're thinking about studying abroad and they're not really sure if they should do it, what advice would you be, what would you give to that person?
Yeah. So I would definitely start off by saying that, kind of the hesitation, the uncertainty is normal. I was in the same boat as well. But at the end of the day, you cannot go wrong. And 1 year from from now, I would tell the person that if you think you're going to be homesick or you're going to miss your friends, that stuff might be there in the beginning, but you're going to grow so much. And by the end of your year or semester, you're going to have such strong feelings and nostalgia for the place you studied and the life you lived. And I would say, do it. You really only get this chance once in a lifetime, and just the relationships you make along the way are really kind of the parts of study abroad that don't really get talked about a lot. You know, the host family relationships or relationships with the students. A lot of times it's focused on, hey, you're going to go see the Eiffel Tower or the Roman Colosseum, all these pictures of places. But the thing that gets left out a lot, I think, is the people and the relationships. And, for my case, that was the thing that made my experience so unbelievable, was the relationships I had with so many people, countless people, other students in my program, the local Moroccan people I met, my teachers, etc. But the people that really stand out and always have a lasting impact on my mind or is my host family. So my host mother and host brother. I would say do it. You know, you really don't get to.
Yeah. No, one thing I was thinking about when I forgot to say it, you were talking about a host family, and I lived for a host family too. I actually did both. I was able to live in two places. I lived with a host family for the first part and then in an apartment in the second part. Okay. But something with the host family is that it's almost like they're more interested in you. Like,
yeah,
they're more interested in learning about you, and they're so excited to have you there.
Yeah.
But the feeling's definitely mutual. Like, oh my God, like, here's breakfast. And you're like, oh my God, thank you for the breakfast. I can't believe you made me breakfast. And oh gosh. And it's kind of a magical little bond that you have.
And don't get me wrong. You know, reality does set in, you know, you're around these people for 8-9 months and they really do become family. So you have conflicts, or some days they get on your nerves or whatnot. But at the end of the day, you know, you grow so much and you grow closer, and it's the love you have for them cannot be replaced or cannot be explained, really.
Right. No, definitely. And now, you were there for a year. This is kind of a multifaceted question. Is there anything specific that stuck out as far as like an epic travel story that goes? And then also, did you visit anywhere else other than Morocco? Like, were you able to travel around? And if so, where did you go?
Yeah, so I'll start with that question. So Morocco is such a unique place. It's the gateway to Africa, gateway to Europe. It's at this crossroads. And a great benefit of that is the fact that there's some really cheap flights to Europe. So there was like a $19 flight one time from Fez to Sevilla, southern Spain. So I was able to travel around to a few countries. I went to Spain for the first time, and I actually kind of hopped over to Spain a couple of times during my year there. Saw Granada, Sevilla, Barcelona, Madrid.
I've got to stop you. This is an episode of first. You're the first person to go abroad for a year that I've talked to. And then also, $19 is probably the cheapest flight I've ever heard of in my life, like anywhere.
Spain. Yeah. And I'm very jealous of those flights. we pay like, you know, $100 is cheap to us. So I got to see a lot of southern Spain. Went and visited a good friend of mine in London one weekend. And kind of at the beginning of my spring semester, I went to Paris, and then also a smaller village north of Paris, and visited some friends of mine there. It sounds like I was hopping around a ton. I didn't really leave Morocco a lot, other than, you know, I had a fall break in the fall, and then kind of the beginning of my spring semester. But other than those kind of trips that I packed a lot into at once, I really made an effort to stay in Morocco and see a lot of the country I was living in. And to answer your first question, that's a tough question for sure. Morocco is just filled with so many beautiful photogenic places. One of my favorite cities that I visited probably was Chefchaouen. So it's called the Blue City, and it's in the mountains, and all the buildings and the houses are blue, and they're connected. And you know, it's similar to where I to the Medina, all the streets could kind of wind together. So as far as like cities go, that was probably my favorite. And one weekend I hiked the tallest mountain in North Africa, Mount Toubkal. That was a overnight hike with some friends of mine. That was honestly a great experience. Beautiful. But I would say nothing compares to the two times I was able to visit the Sahara Desert.
Oh.
There's nothing like being in a place that's so vast. There's nothing for miles and miles and miles on end, but yet it's the most beautiful thing of that, you know, nothingness. And the sunsets are just fire every night. They're unbelievable. And the stars, the most amount of stars I've ever seen. So, it's that the Sahara Desert for sure really, I think, takes the prize.
Oh, wow. Okay. And, the Sahara Desert. Wow. Do you know how big, I can look this up quick, but do you know how big Morocco is off the top of your head? Like, how many people live there?
Well, there's about 35 million, and it's about the size of California. So it's,
wow. So it's wow. Okay. And now, is there anything special about Moroccan food? What is the cuisine like there? Is it different? What's something that you miss that you wish you could just walk down the street and get now that you can't in Knoxville?
So I really miss the prices, for one. So the much cheaper, yeah. And I really miss the Moroccan tagine. So tagine is kind of hard to explain. It's also the name of like the pot they cook it in, but it's slow cooked, and it's chicken or beef, and there's like vegetables, and you have bread with it. It's a really traditional common meal that they eat a lot. And I also miss the couscous. So uh-huh. I'm sure you're more familiar with that. But
yeah, I am more familiar with that.
It was not as Mediterranean as I imagined it was going to be. It was kind of had more of a European influence and more like bread based. It wasn't a lot of pita bread or, you know, hummus. That's more kind of the Middle East, I guess. But so that was kind of a thing that I realized going in, that the food was not like food in Syria or food in that you would have in a Syrian restaurant, for example.
Right. No, definitely.
I loved it.
That's okay. So it's, and then did they have like, I mean, were there, could you get other food that like, could you get, I don't know, like a burger and fries anywhere too? Or is that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was very common for
okay.
sure.
Okay. So 35 million people, they've got pretty much everything, right? Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm always interested to hear like, do they have Chinese restaurants and do they have Mexican restaurants? And,
so they actually, their version of Mexican restaurants is very, very different. So they had, they would have burrito, like tacos or burritos that would have French fries in them. So it was kind of a mix of this like Americanized version. I don't really know what I'm saying, but it was kind of funny. Me and my friends would always joke. There was this place called like Taco Place, but it was not tacos at all. It's not the tacos we're used to, right? From, you know, like the ones from the Southwest.
You don't have to say Taco Bell, but
yeah,
no, but. No, that's what a taco is to us. So yeah, it wasn't.
But it was just funny seeing, yeah, different people have different kind of ideas of what it is to them.
Well, I think it's kind of funny too because they're French fries, right? And they're putting fries in a Mexican taco.
Yeah.
Or uh-huh. So no, yeah, I'm always curious about that, to see the different cultures in different places, like. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to. I don't know what I'm saying either. But yeah. So okay. Now moving on. Do you have any book recommendations or media recommendations, like apps, blogs, or websites that you recommend for traveling, or just anything that you use for productivity, or music, or anything?
Other than the Study Abroad podcast, right?
yeah.
Let me think. So I had a word reference app that I use a lot. That's, you know, if you're going to be in a place where English is not going to be used commonly, I would suggest that. It's called Word Reference.
Okay.
You can look up words and quick translations, and they give you a good context of like when to use the word, the conjugation, the verbs. So that was helpful. And I would say it's just I have a BBC news app that's in Arabic that I can't really read, but I just try to so that having stuff like that to kind of, even though I'm not in Morocco anymore, it's still good to have those to kind of keep your mind on events that are going on in that country or the language, the people. But other than those, not a lot comes to my mind.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's other than the normal apps that, and it's hard because not many people have other apps like that. And so now you were able to enter a contest.
Am I
right? Yeah.
That is correct.
So tell me about this contest that you entered. It was through IES, is that right?
That is very correct. Uh-huh.
Okay, so what were the guidelines of that, and why did you enter and take all this time to do it? Was there an award, or what happened with the contest?
Yeah, so this is the part where I'm going to make a little self-promotion pitch. So, mentioned the music earlier. So,
yes.
At the end of my first semester, I was in my host room playing guitar, and this idea for a song happened, and some of these lyrics related to Morocco and the Sahara Desert and these places I was seeing. Kind of happened, so I wrote them down real quickly, and a few weeks later when I came home, I was inspired to produce this song, and just to really put everything I was experiencing, my journey, onto paper and into a song that the world could hear and listen to, etc. Around this time, I saw an email from IES, the program I studied with, that there was an annual film festival, and so the upcoming deadline was in about 8 months. It was in August, and remind you, this is December, January of 2018. So got this email about this film festival, and in the meantime I was working on this song, right, this an original song about Morocco, and all of a sudden these ideas just kind of came together and started growing and growing. So I went back to Morocco and was able to finish my song. I was worked on it remotely. I sent the files to some people, sent it to a guy who played drums on it, and then sent it to the guy who mixed it for me and mastered it. And at the end of my time in Morocco, or kind of throughout the spring semester, I was shooting a music video for my song. Went to the desert and got some magnificent shots of the desert, and there's shots of me playing guitar by the ocean, and I'm in the Chef Chow in the Blue City that I mentioned a few minutes ago, but very, very kind of unique to my video, to this music video, was I also had the chance to center this video, this film, around my host mother. And so, to kind of give a quick story, my host mother, during my first semester, her father passed away in Canada. And I was there during this tragic time and this mourning. And, looking back, I think that experience really allowed a bond to be formed between me and my host mother and me and my host brother. And so when I started thinking about how to make this music video, I wanted it to really be powerful and really tell a story and really go below the surface of your normal kind of study abroad videos. Hey, look at this city. Oh, I went here, I went there. I went here, I, me. You know what I'm saying? So I incorporated my host mother and was able to tell her story and released the song. So for those of you listening, hopefully the song is called Tangier to Casablanca. By Philip Bates. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere you can find music, it's there. So for me, Chris, this was a really cool kind of, as I was ending my time in Morocco, everything I mentioned earlier about my fears of choosing between these two passions, right? I was able to go to Morocco and experience all these things. And at the very end of my time, I was able to launch this other passion of mine, this music. Launched it, put it on Spotify for the first, and this was the first song that I was able to fully complete and release. So it's very, very meaningful to me that the place that there was so much hesitation and fear was a place actually that where another dream of mine was able to begin. So I released my song. This story kind of continues. Sorry, it's going on and on.
No.
So I released the song, right? So the song's already out there. The public knows about it. But no one knows about this video I'm working on, this film for the film festival. It was an idea that I really had to kind of let marinate for a long time and really take shape in its own form and fashion. But was when I left for Morocco, I had all the footage, and I came back to the States, come back from Morocco, and I'm processing a lot. And then I sit down and I'm like, okay, now I have the song done, but now let's tell a story through film. I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing. Let me call up my friend who knows what he's doing video wise. He's going to give me some tips. And thankfully, I was able to spend a lot of time in the summer putting it together, and then I entered it into this film festival. So it's a very unique idea. This study abroad organization does an annual film festival. They're the first ones to ever do it. It's kind of a revolutionary, groundbreaking thing. It allows students to tell their own stories of study abroad and how that has impacted them. And there were 96 films submitted, Chris, and about a month and a half later, I was informed that I was a top three finalist, which was incredible news, and it was so awesome. It really just was extraordinary news to hear. And so this past week, where me and you met, they flew me up to Chicago for the film festival event, and it was in Chicago where I found out that I was selected as the winner. Uh-huh. And so my film, that this idea, this song, what started out as just a few lyrics turned into a song, turned into a produced song that I released, and then turned into a actual music video / film that features this song, but also features my journey through Morocco and then the story of my host mother. And if you're out there listening, would love for you to check it out, Tangier to Casablanca.
Yeah, we'll put it in your show notes for sure. So yeah, they don't even have to check it out. If they're right here, they can look at it.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think it just went from a study abroad interview to like a Grammy acceptance speech. That was that was pretty good, Philip.
Yeah.
It's really touching. Let me ask you about how did you recorded it while you were over there, right?
I wrote it when I was in Morocco.
You wrote it.
All the lyrics and kind of musically how the chords were going to go.
Yeah.
Happened really quickly, probably in like one day, a night, I believe. But this was at the very end of my program, the fall semester.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to go home for Christmas and the New Year's in about a week. So I wrote the song, and then 1 week later, I was on a plane headed back to the U.S. to spend Christmas and the New Year's with my family. And that's when I was, when I came home was when I was back around my, speakers and monitors and, the equipment needed to produce the song. The microphone.
See, that's what I was curious about. So it worked out perfectly
It worked out perfectly. The song happened, kind of last minute, 11th hour when I was getting on the plane. And then this idea is growing. What do I do with this song, Chris? These are all the thoughts going on my mind.
Yeah.
Because, as a musician, as somebody who does creative things, you get this feeling a lot. You write a song, you have great ideas for lyrics, and then the idea maybe fades. You're, how am I going to do this? How can I produce this? Will people connect with this? But for some reason, this idea, this song just could not get away from me. And I realized, I had this chance, this lifetime, once in a lifetime chance. Once in a lifetime chance to produce this song and get it done, because I was going to be headed back to Morocco, and that's when I was going to be able to do the video and do the film.
So you were aware of the contest at this time?
I was, yeah. So okay. I saw the email. That was the first time I was aware of the contest, was when I saw the email. But actually, it's been going on for about 4 years. So I was able to see some of the other, people who won it in the past, the other finalists. So kind of saw what they were looking for. I was able to see what had been done in the past. And I was really excited because, number one, I knew that this was going to be the first, music video, but also in the first original song. So I think I had a lot of things play to my advantage. It was an original song that was produced, and it talks about Morocco, the country I'm studying in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it also features my host mother. So these elements of study abroad that are so, so powerful, but sometimes get overlooked and don't get talked about, you know, enough. And thankfully, I was able to kind of weave all of those into a cohesive story and a cohesive film. And yeah, it's been a really, really remarkable journey.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just really, so I was actually at the awards show where Philip won, and it was pretty cool what they did, but they had, they told his host mother ahead of time that he was going to win, so they shot this video with her, and it was a surprise to him, and it was really cool to see, like, they put it up on, you know, they had one of those big screens, and they put it up there, and it was really cool to see.
Yeah, that moment, Chris, was probably the, obviously there was a grand prize, that was, you know, cool to win that, but I think that video that you just mentioned, that made me so emotional. And then I had to give my speech, which was not, you know, but I think it was almost better to get all those emotions out, right, and make me more human. But yeah, that video I consider to be the real prize of the night. So yeah, I'm happy to mention that.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, do you have a favorite quote you want to share with anyone, or should I just pull one from your lyrics on the song?
Yeah. This is a quote that maybe I've said. Who knows? I don't know. But maybe the one. So two different quotes that from this past. Obviously, these aren't probably the most favorite quotes for my lifetime. But for this season of life, when I was in Morocco, the two quotes that. Number one, the quote that my friend gave me, the more life and experiences you have, the more life you pour into your music or creative passion. I think that's a good one that really affected how I viewed the journey and how that inspired me to do the song. But also something, and this was a quote that it's funny as it sounds, but I think I came up with it. I don't know. We're all on a journey, and it's not the places or sites you see that have the lasting impact on us. It's the people. So that's the quote.
Oh no, yeah, you dabbled into that. You were talking about that earlier in the interview.
I'm the first one that studied abroad, first one about the song, and then the first one to quote himself. So there's lots of firsts today.
Yeah, that's really good put. And you have this kind of, there's just something different in the back of your mind when you're traveling. It's just like you have this kind of adventure or excitedness about you that you normally wouldn't have. And actually a podcast or a video blog that I watch, they say to all, like, even if you're at home, have a travel, like, have a mindset as if you're traveling. It changes your perception of the world.
Every day's a journey, every day's an adventure, and it's really the people that make it. That's what I've learned.
Well that was great, Philip. Thank you very much. Philip Bates, everyone. Philip, do you have anything else you want to add?
I do not. Thank you, Chris, for having me on, and hope people will go check out the video, some of the songs, and enjoy it and be inspired to go embark on their own journeys and tell their own story.
Definitely. Thank you. All right, Philip, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to check out all the really neat infographics on the rest of the posts as well as the interviews. There's a lot of good information. You should also download Studying Abroad 201. I really recommend it if you need kind of a fire lit under your ass for studying abroad and you need some motivation. It crafts my journey and exactly what I did. Also, we can email you new interviews, or you can connect with us on social media. All right, thanks a lot.